Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey folks, Zach Osmer here, I'm Insider Indianapolis Star. It is Sunday night, September 4th, 2022. Dustin, I'm wearing my 2021 World Series champion Atlanta Braves hat. Many people are saying that, Dustin.
Yes, they did in fact win the 2021 World Series.
You're hearing it more and more.
You're hearing it more and more that it happened.
Braves are only a game back of the Mets in case Ralph Russo happens to be listening. I doubt Ralph is listening. God help him if he is. Indiana 23, Illinois 20. I think everybody will know, Dustin, why we're here. I just kind of want to talk. I mean, just kind of break down the game. I think the aim probably during the season is maybe a couple of these, one on the Sunday or the Monday, sort of breaking down the previous weekend, and then one later in the week, sort of looking ahead to the week ahead. You know, I mean, fundamentally, Indiana needed to win this game. They needed to win it for the tangible reasons to make the numbers add up to six at the end of the year. They needed to win it to kind of get back to that place where they were the Indiana that made sure they beat all the teams below them in the Big Ten. They needed to win it because it was at home, and they needed to win it because they needed to be able to tell themselves that 2021 was over.
Yes, all the above.
It wasn't gorgeous. I've seen Indiana bowl teams play a lot worse in season openers. That doesn't mean this one is a bowl team, but the point is, assuming for better or for worse that what Indiana was on Friday night is what Indiana will be all year, is faulty. But they needed this win and they got it. And I think that's the one thing that Tom Allen is allowed to celebrate as much as anything else when he's walking out of the room yelling "Go Hoosiers" on Friday night.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think you just had to be there, show up, show some grit, like just something, I guess tangibly intangible, if you will, I guess is a weird way of putting it, but just the fact that they put all this, a lot of what they talked about with all offseason was accountability, and the accountability was based on the idea of the guys felt like other guys quit. Guys felt like other guys packed it in once the season got tough enough, especially once it was impossible for them to make a bowl. But even when it became clear that 2021 was not going to be the special season that it was supposed to be, there was the sense that the guys just never really bought into the secondary goals. Once the idea of having a truly special season was gone, it just seemed like they're, and part of that was because a lot of guys were hurt, but all the same, just did not seem like guys were invested in just trying to get wins at all, just trying to win a football game. And you saw that in game one. You saw in game one that they finally did that. They did the opposite. Basically, they went all out, and they, in spite of a lot of things going wrong and a lot of things being disconcerting, kept seeing opportunities to change the game around, kept seeing opportunities to turn it, made, you know, turnovers when they could. I mean, the goal line stand is basically the perfect example of that, of, you know, like they're running it down your throat. They're not having any problem getting it to Chase Brown and him just running you over. You know, they're just a couple yards away from putting this thing in and possibly putting this game away and saying, no, you're not, you know, we're going to find a way to win up the middle. And they hadn't, you know, they were bad on offense in the trenches. They weren't great on defenses in the trenches either, but for like two or three plays when they absolutely had to be, they found a way. And that, I think, was a pretty big microcosm of what they hadn't been a year ago and what they really want to be this year, and being able to summon that and be able to say, like, look what happens when, you know, when you play with grit, when you don't give up, you know, I think was so big for Tom Allen, and just the sense of what it's like to win a Big Ten football game. There's just so much relief. And, you know, basically that you saw on that man's face last night. And you know, he likes it. Like I said in the post game video we did, that this is as emotional as I've ever seen him. As much as he's an emotional guy, you know, this one meant a lot to him. And he does absolutely, you know, have every right to celebrate that one. You know, just puts them in a really good place that they get two non-conference games after this, two very winnable non-conference games after this before Cincinnati, which is going to be tough. But now they get to, you know, kind of take what they've learned and kind of take their time with fixing that. But getting to do that at 1-0 with a win over Illinois with versus 0-1 is a really, really big deal.
I want to zoom in, then zoom out again. And you brought up the defensive performance in particular. So let's start there. And I speed read my way through the film, if you want to say, a little bit yesterday and today. The thing I couldn't get away from, and I felt it in real time, I certainly felt it watching it again, that this was a Tom Allen defense. That, you know, this is the idea he's built. It's built to be versatile. It's built to be played fast against, which, quite frankly, as the game wore on, you could tell Illinois' defense was not necessarily built that way. It's not going to smother most teams because it's not necessarily going to have that top line talent that just allows you to win a bunch of individual matchups. But it's going to make plays when they're there to be made. You know, you look at some of the, I mean, even like the first turnover, the Luke Ford fumble, we hear so much about them doing, you know, these drills and different things in practice that are supposed to sort of help manufacture turnovers. It's literally Ford like running parallel to the yard line where he caught the ball. And Alfred Bryant just putting his shoulder into the ball, not the man, the ball. I mean, it's intentional. You know, you bring up the goal line stand. I think something else that jumps out to me as I'm just sort of like flipping through the post game notes is, and certainly once you're kind of thinking back to the way the game went, who was around? I mean, like Cam Jones was all over the place, but nobody else had more than 7 tackles. You had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 players that registered at least half a tackle for a loss. 3 different players forced fumbles. My point is, you know, Tom Allen defenses are built around the idea that the collective commits to being very opportunistic, but also creating those opportunities for itself. You know, there were some things that weren't great. Obviously you don't want to let a running back go for almost 200 on you. I thought that it was really noticeable. I thought it was noticeable in real time and even more noticeable watching it back, how dialed into Indiana's slot blitzes Illinois was. That was something that worked really well for Indiana, particularly in 2020. They had a lot of success blitzing out of the slot with Taiwan Mullen. Illinois either ran away from it or threw straight into it, like basically every time they tried to do it. And that's one of those things where, are you disguising it wrong? Is there something you're showing that you shouldn't be? But that's the sort of thing Tom Allen wants to be able to do. But on the other hand, you know, linebacker blitzes were good. We saw obviously Cam Jones, but Desan McCullough, Bradley Jennings, Aaron Casey getting in the backfield. There was just so much about Friday night that felt like the sort of, you know, if you want to say the quintessential Tom Allen defensive performance, that I remember Kevin Wilson used to have a rule of thumb that, and I cite Kevin Wilson on here a lot, but I think he's a very smart man when it comes to offense, that a good offense should score about 1 point for every 10 yards of offense. And in some ways, this is a bit rudimentary. In fact, it's probably pretty rudimentary. But I've often thought about Tom Allen's best defenses this way, is that basically they double that. If they can double that, they're doing well. If they're making you basically score a point for every 18 to 20 yards of total offense, that's kind of the point. They're going to give up some yards, as you said the other night, between the 30s. But like, that's not what they're designed to do. What they're designed to do is seize on your mistakes and stiffen up when it matters. And Illinois had 448 total yards of offense. They were balanced, 216 on the ground, 232 through the air, and they scored 20 points. And like, to some degree, like, yes, they had that goal line stand, but on the other hand, if it's 4th and 1 on the 1 and you can't punch it in, you don't deserve to score. Like, they deserved to score 20 points. Indiana didn't get lucky. And kind of one of the bigger, if you're looking for the positive takeaways for me from Friday night, one of the more overarching things, certainly on offense, but on defense too, is Indiana won the game. They were imperfect. They played like it was week 1, but nobody played out of their skin. Nobody other than Cam Jones, which is something you can sort of rely on, broadly speaking. He's a very good player. you didn't walk away thinking, oh my God, if not for, you know, Brett Bielema wasn't getting on the bus thinking we would have won today if not for that meddling kid, you know, like they won because the system worked. And especially on defense, you know, as somebody who covered 2019, 2020, I know you weren't as in, you know, kind of day to day with that as I was. This is what it looked like. Give up some yards, live with that, because when, you know, when the rubber really meets the road, you're going to be the one that's there winning those individual matchups.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, and I think we talked a lot about this same deal on Friday, even during the game while we were watching. But yeah, no, it, you know, Chase Brown gets 199 yards rushing, I think. I mean, like you go into this thinking, you know, that's a guy that you have to stop, and you really don't. 5.5 yards a carry, this kid picks up. You know, Tommy DeVito, 21 of 35, 232, two touchdowns. Like a lot of, if Tom Allen viewed his markers as, you know, what kind of production opponents get, then just about everything was bad. As far, like if that's how you were sort of judging things, Isaiah Williams was another guy that he talked a lot about how important it was to stop him. He has 9 catches, 112 yards and a touchdown. But again, you know, to your point, 448 yards of total offense, 20 points. I mean, that's less than a point every 20 yards. So
I think Illinois had, I'd have to go back and look at my story. I counted at my story. I think they were inside, they were in plus territory 5 times in the second half, and they scored a touchdown once. You know, I mean, that's it. Like that's, yes, you're going to move the ball on us. That's fine. We're never going to be the 85 Bears, but when it's when you're looking to, you know, what is the Mike Woodson phrase? When it's nut cutting time, like we're going to win those.
It's not Mike Woodson's phrase, but it's the fact that he's willing to say that on the record and press.
Yeah, that, I'd never heard it before him.
I heard many say it before, just not in front of a microphone in a press conference, televised, et cetera. Usually they save that one for either when the microphones are off or when at least the cameras aren't on. Mike says it wherever the hell you want to say it. But yeah, no, I mean, and I think another thing that was interesting, is when you talk about just, you know, spreading around the big plays, man, they rotated a lot on defense. I mean, a lot, you know, I think there were a lot of guys who got in the football game. You know, I mean, probably 3 sets of safeties, somewhere in that range, you know, bunch of guys playing corner. You know, they flipped the two. They have two, you know, what's the word I'm looking for here? 2 shifts of linebackers between, you know, Jones and Casey and Jennings and Jared Casey. And so they basically flipped those a lot.
Deshaun McCullough in there too. He was part of that big play early and he had 6 tackles.
Yeah, I mean, Deshaun at this point, I think, is a stinger and a bull. I think he's operating as both of those things.
Yeah, essentially. That's what it looks like.
And there might be more that I'm missing.
But you're also seeing stuff like I mean, just, you know, and I recognize that like we do this more than like the average fan, and it's because it's our job. But like, you know, it's back to a lot of like the fronts you'd expect, like heavier fronts with linebackers filling gaps and delayed blitzes and you know, reads. I mean, like that early sack that Cam Jones and it looks like they only awarded it to Cam Jones. I feel like Deshaun McCullough probably deserved a half sack there, but it was the sack that stopped Illinois' first drive. Like, I think Deshaun was at the line of scrimmage and kind of like stunted, but he was inside the end and then he stunted. So he's probably basically playing sort of backer, I guess, at that point. And then Cam Jones delayed and they kind of got there at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it felt like Indiana got away from that last year, and I'm not picking on Charlton Warren, although certainly no one needs to do that considering how badly App State did on Saturday. That was a basketball game, and I'm not.
That was fun.
It was a lot of fun, and Boone was.
There's no defense was being played, but it was fun.
Believe me, Boone's a town that knows how to embrace that kind of fun, but
it does.
You know, it did feel a little bit last season. Once we were able to kind of look back on it, and again, like sort of once we were able to see Tom Allen get it back to what he wanted, it felt sort of like this idea that, you know, that maybe Indiana changed 1 or 2 things, small things last year, And it was like, okay, we're just going to do a couple things differently. We're not going to be dramatic about it. Just a small handful of stuff. And then a couple guys got hurt. And so suddenly you had to tweak something else. And then somebody else got hurt and you you started to struggle with this thing, with this fit. So suddenly you tweak something else. And all of a sudden, like, I think there's that West Wing episode where they talk about how first time pilots go into cloud cover and stop trusting their instrumentation. And they keep course correcting no matter what it tells them. And they come out of the clouds completely upside down. Like it felt like it was all kind of best intention stuff, but like Indiana just kept making small course corrections until you looked up one day and they were just running a completely different defense in a lot of ways. And this felt a lot, just so much more familiar. And listen, you know, there have been plenty of times where we've seen Indiana play these kinds of games and they still get let down. They don't win the game. But when you win, you know, Tom Allen is not wrong to say this. When you win, you're allowed to sort of be like, it worked, you know, and okay, they didn't win 38-20. They won 23-20, but they won. And especially given this is week one for them as opposed to week two for Illinois and, you know, all the emotional baggage that we're going to be carrying into this, like you really are just kind of allowed to be like, yes, we're back to what we always wanted to be. Three sacks against a quarterback that didn't get sacked once last week. You know, 10 tackles for loss, 3 fumble recoveries, the interception, and again, the turnover on downs probably should count as a turnover because it was the most important change of possession of the game. I mean, it just looks like a Tom Allen defense again.
Right. Now, I think it sort of connects to what you were saying about, and that's a really good West Wing pull. I'm trying to remember which episode is that is and what's going on in that one.
It's Senator Stackhouse that says
okay.
It. I don't remember the red mask. That's what it was.
Wow.
The Red Wedding. Very different episode.
Very different from the Red Wedding. Very impressive. But I think it sort of halfway connects with that I wonder if, like, Tom Allen came out during the press conference, Friday night and said, you know, you're going to give up yards. And I wonder how tough that is as a guy who is coaching for someone for the first time, as a coordinator with somebody for the first time, to truly accept that in your game planning, in your, you know, preparation, like truly buying into the idea that it's okay if you give up 15-yard plays here and there, if you get outgained, if you get outgained by 100, you know, almost 100 yards, you know, give up 450 yards of offense, that you can trust that you can still beat somebody doing that. And also, we're not going to hold you to, you know, your yards is not what we're going to judge you by. You know, basically the end of the year when we're talking about, you know, staff evaluations, we truly don't care how many yards you give up. We care how many points you give up and we care how many turnovers you get. Like, that is what we care about, you know? And so it makes me wonder if that was a big part of that Warren never fully embraced or never really trusted that, you know, just in part by being a first-year coordinator, just not believing that he wasn't going to be judged by how many yards he gave up. And so game planning is, well, we got to take this away, we got to take that away, and not sort of been willing to say, all right, like, we're going to come out in zone, we're going to trust the idea of playing zone vision, keeping guys' eyes on the ball, and, you know, standing back there and being willing to give up chunk plays because we're, you know, there are holes in the zone that you can find and you can complete a pass there and you can probably, you know, find some running lanes over here and we're going to live with that because we'll stiffen up when it gets closer and we'll also, you know, create turnovers and, you know, blitz hard enough that we're, you know, we'll get home on more of those blitzes. I wonder if he ever trusted that. And I think it was Tom Allen just saying, you know, no one is going to believe that I'm saying this if they're new. So I got to do this by myself. And, you know, maybe Chad Wild eventually by working with Tom Allen figures that out and, you know, you can hand it over to him eventually once he's seen that that's what it is, that, you know, that really, I don't care if you give up 450 yards of offense, you can win the game anyway. And here's how we're going to do that. If you know, trust me and believe that.
The one other thing I did want to reserve, I mean, if there's a player of the game for Indiana, and I guess there has to be, Cam Jones, I just thought was fantastic. And, you know,
he absolutely was.
It's funny because it's not like he's been playing in Micah McFadden's shadow. Like, he's been a good player the last couple years in his own right, but it feels like Indiana has put so much kind of on McFadden's shoulders that McFadden has this you know, this sort of gravitational pull when he's in the middle of that defense, that that sort of means Jones always feels sort of like the plus one, and that's unfair. He's always, he's played better yeah, for a long time, but but it always sort of feels like Micah McFadden and Cam Jones, or and then Cam Jones. And I don't think necessarily Indiana was just asking Cam Jones to do all the Micah McFadden things on Saturday, on Friday. It will be interesting to see kind of how that evolves. And of course, I mean, like, for example, if you're Tom Allen, like, you might be looking at him right now. We know he came off of the injury and then went back out and finished the game. You might be looking at Idaho and being like, listen, Cam, you're not playing this week. Like, you know, you are, like, you might dress and you might play it for a quarter, but, like, you know, you need to be prepared for, like, a quiet Saturday night. But, you know, when Indiana kind of went searching for people to really step up and take ownership of not just what happened, because it's not like Indiana wanted to live in 2021, but more take ownership of digging out of that hole. Like, Cam Jones was at the front of the line. And
yeah, very much so.
I mean, the way he played, 12 tackles, six solo, six assisted, which, like, six solo was a co-team high. Six assisted, nobody else had more than five. And he had a sack. He had a quarterback hurry. He recovered a fumble. I mean, he was everywhere. And he felt like the guy that just set the tone in a game that, when I've interacted with IU fans, there has been a distinct sort of like, boy, if that's as good as we are, then we're screwed. Well, number one, like, most teams are a lot better by the end of a season than they are in week one. That's just reality. Number two, I think because it's week one, people are kind of forgetting they were playing a Big Ten team, and not necessarily a great one, but one that was one win away from a bowl last year, one that's coached by a guy that is perfectly comfortable in the Big Ten. And if nothing else, a Big Ten team. You know, this wasn't like 2015 when Indiana opened with Southern Illinois and their defense was so bad that Southern Illinois was going for two with a chance to win the game in overtime. And it was only because of a drop pass in the end zone that Indiana didn't go 5-7 the first year Kevin Wilson made a bowl game. You know, this was always bound to be a tough game. And, you know, I just thought, frankly, for my money, probably the best player on the field, if it wasn't Chase Brown, was Cam Jones.
Yeah, but I will also put up for Cam Camper, too. I mean, 11 for, what, 156? It's kind of a big deal. I mean, I think Maxine's got thoughts. I mean, the one thing I would say for Indiana fans in terms of why I think what their fears really stem from, the offensive line is legitimately concerning. Like, that's not a, you know,
we'll come on to don't worry, the offense is queued up, I promise.
Sure. Well, I know, but my point is, I mean, defensively, Cam Jones was fantastic. Defensively, I think, to that end, I mean, I you got to feel pretty good about what you saw defensively when you take a step back from it and then see the whole picture. And I think that's another thing too, is because everything we just said, it comes back to this idea that, you know, if when you're giving up chunks of yards during the game, like, especially if it's the first and second quarter, you're like, okay, one of these, this levee is going to break here, you know, and when it's not until you get through the whole game and it doesn't, that you trust it, that you say, whoa, you know, only 20 points out of 448 yards of offense. Okay, like, this, I see how this makes sense now. You know, like, I see it at the end of the day, when you've seen the turnovers, you've seen some sacks, you know, you've seen the havoc at the right times to keep you from those turning into points, then you're like, okay, I get it now. And I don't think they were as impressed early, and they thought maybe it wasn't great, because that's what happens to Tom Allen offense. There's times when it looks like it's very, very beatable, but, you know, like, when they have to make plays, they do. So I think that there is more. I think the fan base has come around on the defense to start believing, okay, it's better than it legitimately is improved, and that, you know, that you are seeing the fruits of the labor here of Tom Allen taking the defense back.
I think this team is going to have to live on, I mean, first of all, Tom Allen teams do always sort of live on a bit of a knife's edge. And I think that's a fair point you make. Second of all, this team is going to have to live game by game a little bit. Like, they're not going to just get all of this confidence and swagger of 19 and 20 back in one night. But I will say, I think we're going to talk about the offensive line. Quietly, I thought a lot else on the offense pretty good. And primarily because, and again, I come back to this idea, like nobody played out of their skin. Like Cam Camper wasn't making one-handed catches on the sideline. Like Illinois basically went hat for hat or better in the box most of the time. Like they just kind of went, you know, if Indiana had six in the box, Illinois had six in the box. If Indiana had five in the box, Illinois had five in the box. They might've overloaded a couple times. But you know, that was primarily what they did. And then they were just playing a lot of man coverage with either one high safety or two high safeties. So it was a lot of basically just sort of go in your matchup, essentially. Like that's the challenge. And I know people are stressing about the rushing number. I don't blame them. 1.2 yards per carry is very, very bad. I'll also say what I have said for the last 6 years. Tom Allen's offenses have never run the ball well. It's almost like maybe it's not that big of a priority. One day I'll be proven wrong.
Right. But right now. But they hired Walt Bell to make it a bigger priority.
Okay, that's fine. In the same way that they hired Mike DeBoer to make it a priority. And then when they hired Kalen DeBoer, Tom Allen said he wanted to run the ball better. And then when Nick Sheridan took over, he said, we got to run the ball better. And you know what they kept doing? Throwing the ball. Now, the pass game was not great either. Connor Bazelak, I thought, had a good day. The one interception really wasn't his fault. On the other hand, you know, there was a noticeable kind of collection of either throws he really missed. Like there was one up the seam to Anderson Kobe that he sailed by about 6 yards. Yeah. And then some others that could have turned into interceptions in other cases. He started 4 of 11. I thought it was interesting. He finished 24-41 from there. That was a good statistical pull from Greg Doyle, our columnist. That's 53.8% overall completion rate, but up to 58.5% in his last 41 passes. Again, I think like the thing to be most encouraged about, if you're Indiana, and don't worry, we're going to come onto the line in a minute, is the pass is probably going to remain a priority. And the passing game worked because guys just kept winning their matchups. And obviously a lot of that was Cam Camper and DJ Matthews, but like even AJ Barner, who looked a little bit banged up on Friday night, he only had 4 catches, but 3 of them went for first downs.
Yeah.
And so it's just sort of like, and again, you know, it wasn't because these guys were making highlight reel catches. They had a, you know, there were a couple nice ones, but there were also just a lot of like, you just couldn't, you know, they beat the man to the spot. You know, they had single coverage or they had man coverage and they just beat it. And that plays, that lasts. You know, that is something that is just reflective of being good and well coached. I think you need, number one, you obviously do need more of a run game than 1.2 yards per carry. I understand that. Number two, you probably want to see a couple more playmakers step up, whether it's a running back like a Sean Shivers, or it's a, you know, obviously maybe getting Barner a little bit healthier, or it's an Emory Simmons or a Donovan McCulley or whoever. But I think the encouraging thing, if you follow my theory, which I've held for a while, that Indiana's offense is going to be based around the pass, regardless of what anyone says in front of a microphone or a recorder, I thought Indiana had a good day in that regard. Not a great one. And again, we'll talk about pass pro in a minute and just general pro in a minute. But I thought in the balance, or on the balance, considering, you know, basically none of these guys had ever started in any meaningful capacity for Indiana before Friday night, except DJ Matthews and his career before Friday was fleeting. I thought it was a good day.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think, and to your point there, the fact that they were able to identify two real legitimate go-to guys in game one, considering they really didn't have any idea going into this season who their guys were going to be. I mean, new wide receivers, new running back, new quarterback. Like, you know, obviously they've had all offseason, they had all spring to get this done. And you know, a lot of guys had a lot of time to make their case. Getting two guys out on the field and then being like, yes, it's me. You can trust me. You can go to me. And when the chips are down, I'm your guy. The fact that two guys stepped up and established themselves to that degree in game one is a big deal. It's a really big deal. I mean, I thought it was interesting that Walt Bell kind of mentioned it, you know, this week when he was talking about how many guys he was going to play. You know, he said, but, you know, we're going to play 8 or 9, but we are going to identify who the playmakers are, who the guys that we can really trust are. So when it comes down to it, they're the ones getting the ball, you know? And so, like, again, the Camper and Matthews, you know, identified themselves the way they did, you know, stood out to that degree and, you know, basically said down the stretch, get me the football. Like, big, huge deal, especially with new quarterback in Bazelak, guy coming in out of nowhere, out of Missouri. Just a big deal that he has two guys that he believes every time are going to find a way to get open and catch the football. It's just a really big deal for the future, for what's coming for us this season. To again, two guys you really, really trust, a big one and a smaller, faster one. Huge deal. I don't know. I have no idea what she's mad at.
It's a proud tradition at our house. So we'll join you and we'll bring you into that as well. Last thing on the offense is the thing I think a lot of people are going to be talking about. We've saved it to this point, basically just because I wanted to string you along through the whole podcast. And if you're still listening now, guess what? It worked. The offensive line was very poor, in particular the interior line, I thought was very poor. I didn't think necessarily the tackles were great and the guards were terrible. But it felt like, you know, particularly, again, if you look back at that last drive, they're at least setting the edge a little bit better. Whereas, you know, there were just too many times when basic rushes and relatively straightforward twists and stunts were just coming straight up the middle in Connor Bazelak's face. It's a concern insofar as that's the one area of the offense that didn't change substantially across, you know, the course of the last 12 months. Obviously, there's some new faces in there. A guy like Khalil Benson, for example, getting more playing time. We've also seen kind of guys restored to maybe their more natural positions. I'm thinking, of course, of Matt Bedford in particular, and we'll see what Bedford's status is. He kind of actually came up hobbling a couple plays earlier, then went down, like played through it, then went down again. He was still in pads Friday night, but he never went back in after, I think that happened in the first half. Again, you know, he's one where at minimum you'd be sort of surprised to see him this weekend, just because you should be able to beat Idaho without him. Offensive lines can get better across the course of a season. In fact, they should, you know, just like any other element of an offense. And, you know, it is worth saying Walt Bell has a lot more coordinator. I'm not picking on Nick Sheridan, but Walt Bell has a lot more experience as a coordinator than Sheridan did this time a year ago. It's on an offensive coordinator, you know, after week one and seeing those kinds of performances to say, okay, now I go back to the film and I figure out what we did well. Because we're going to find ways to make sure we keep putting our guys in those positions rather than asking them to do things that maybe we're learning they can't do as well, that maybe we thought they'd improve, but it turned out they didn't or whatever. I also think it's fair for Tom Allen or Walt Bell or whoever to kind of roll the tape and film after Illinois and be like, guys, the offensive worked when you blocked it. Like, we, you know, it didn't take us turning into the Avengers. Like when you landed your blocks and you executed well, look what we did. The offense worked when we blocked it. It wasn't like Bazelak was running for his life and making crazy plays with his legs. You know, the last drive in particular, it wasn't like the protection was perfect, but it was pretty steady. And look what happened. But that was an enormous issue last season. That was, you know, as fundamental to Indiana's offensive misery as any other, you know, bullet point on the list, because it contributed to so many of the other bullet points on the list, not least among them quarterback play.
Injuries. Also quarterback injuries.
Yeah, right. You know, to say you've got to get this fixed is oversimplifying it. But Indiana has got to do better at coming out of week one and week two to some extent, because they're playing the same team in week two that they did a year ago. You have got to manage everything from Friday night all the way through Idaho to Western Kentucky, and what you improve upon, what you shift to, what you pivot to, what you emphasize, any way that you shuffle your rotations, your starting lineup, who you're playing behind guys, whatever. You have got to get that right, as you know, you've got to get that much more right than you did a year ago, or this is probably going to look like nothing more in the history books than a fun opener in an otherwise forgettable season.
Yep. Yeah, no, I mean, it was that bad. I mean, I haven't done a full rewatch to see just everything, but there was just so many occasions when they were losing, and you can, you know, like, they have a good enough quarterback, a couple of really good wide receivers, and the only chance that works is if that guy's got a chance, has time to get the ball out. I think they've got at least decent running backs, you know, that were practically invisible on Friday night, and you know, and I think like they have options, but if they have nowhere to run, they have nowhere to run. And so you cannot do anything if you can't block anything. As to go back to Kevin Wilson, your offense is what you can block. What can they block? You know, and again, they were able to pass protect okay a couple times. Couldn't protect anything on the run, but weren't, you know, steady enough as pass protection to be trustworthy. And you know, again, with on the flip side of, I mean, they had, you know, they have 362 total yards, 330 yards passing, and only turned that into 23 points. Is what we were talking about. IU, you know, basically Illinois the opposite way. You know, if you have those good weapons, you should be able to get more points, and it's harder to get points when you're not winning up front. And so, yeah, it's bad. It's an issue. And you know, I mean, the question, just a big question, is do they have good enough personnel? You know, like, there are probably things that you can scheme and things that you can do. Are these guys good enough up front? And like, what's, you know, I don't get any sense, never got any sense that there's something below them that they would be much better off flipping up there. So what does that tell you about the depth of that position group right now?
I mean, that is probably and justifiably your biggest concern if you're an Indiana fan, maybe probably your biggest concern if you're Tom Allen. We only have about 2 minutes left, but I do just kind of want to circle back to what we were talking about at the beginning and some things you brought up. Like, you know, it's simplistic, but, and I'll give you the last word on this. Indiana is allowed to say yes, but we won. And we won, frankly, because they played winning football. They committed fewer mistakes. They allowed fewer sacks. They committed substantially fewer turnovers. You know, Illinois had 6 tackles for loss. Indiana had 10. You know, you go back and watch individual matchups, Indiana won them. And it's only Illinois, but they couldn't even do that last year. It really does just feel like, we've got like about 30 seconds left, forgive me, but it really does just feel like Indiana is allowed, if nothing else, come out of this and be like, not everything's fixed and we're all fine and it will be rosy forever, but all the pain we put ourselves through in the offseason was worth it because we came out the other side, the team that we thought we needed to be.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, they have a small margin for error going forward, but it's bigger than it would have been if they lost this game.
It helps at least that, you know, you beat Illinois, now you get Idaho. So you kind of have 2 weeks, you know, here to really gird yourself for the rest of the schedule. So we'll be back midweek after we talk to Tom Allen and company about Illinois. And spinning ahead to Idaho between now and then for the Indianapolis Star, for the Bloomington Herald Times. I'm Zach Osterman. He's Dustin Dupirak. We'll talk to you soon. Thank you so much for listening.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.